Grave Tone.
Welcome to Grave Tone Podcast, where horror comes to life in every form it takes. I'm Megan.
I'm Arthur.
And we just got back from seeing Hokum, a film that utilizes one of, I think, the horror genre's most deadly weapons in its arsenal, which is lack of overhead lighting.
What?
That was
surprising to hear.
I'm not wrong.
Oh, no, it's great.
Yeah.
That creates the atmosphere and the visuals and everything.
And I don't mean that in, like, a disparaging way at all. It's done very purposefully, but you just spend so much time being like, God, I wish there was an overhead light in this room.
No.
I did.
None for you. None for Gretchen.
This is coming from the man who loves having fucking overhead lighting in a room.
Yeah, at home.
Yeah, you need it.
Why do you want to live in the dark, weirdo?
Okay, I don't. I'm fine with overhead lighting.
You barely turn on the lights.
No, yeah, I do. What do you mean?
Okay.
No. Okay.
Okay.
Why are we talking about this?
I don't know. We're talking about Hokum, and that's what it is. Mm-hmm. We just came back from it,
yeah.
And it was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, we really liked it.
Seriously, so good. I am not surprised that it was so hyped at South by Southwest.
Yeah, that's fair.
And we went to see it kind of like, I guess, the night before it releases or something. Anyways, whatever, that whole weird thing.
That weird thing where there are places in which sometimes, you know, it's like the official release date is quote unquote May 1st.
Yeah.
But the day before you can find
screenings. Yeah, like in the evening, they're like, okay, whatever, I guess.
Yes, it's okay.
Yeah, so anyways, we did that. Yeah. And obviously, and it was completely packed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it was almost
completely packed, which is awesome. All right, so as you know, and if you haven't heard the show before, or if this is the first episode you're listening to, what we always do is that there is going to be some spoilers, but they will be announced.
Yes,
and correct. Before that, we're going to talk about a little bit about the plot and the cast mm-hmm. and what our first impressions are.
Yeah.
And I have a cool bunch of trivia here. That is obviously not spoilery.
No. If they're spoilery stuff, we'll save it for later.
Talk about. And then, after the spoiler bit, after Gary says his thing, we're going to go over the movie, but not like in super detail, not revealing everything and whatever it is. We still want you to watch the movie.
We'll do a generalized overall premise and, you know, synopsis, but we will not get into every single plot point.
No, exactly. That's it. So we're going to get into it, but before that, I just want to say thank you very much for rating the show. Seriously, it helps so much.
And thank you so much. Gary is digging a grave in your honor. Thank
That's
you so
right.
much,
yeah,
everyone.
So please keep doing that. If you keep listening to this and you like it, thank you very much in advance. And now, Hokum.
Okay, so I will do my little bitty and read the little IMDb synopsis that has been provided. A horror writer visits an Irish inn to scatter his parents' ashes. Unaware, the property is said to be haunted by a witch.
Mm.
It's a very straightforward description, which technically is the plot of the film.
And then it is not the plot of the film, you know what I mean?
I would just say in terms of themes and things like that, it goes quite a bit deeper.
There's so much more going on in this. There's so much more going on than what is shown in the trailer. It is, it's absolutely amazing. Before we get into this, there's a couple of really cool things that I found in my little span of research because, you know, IMDb doesn't provide enough information and the cool things and facts about the movie. So anyways, you know, as you know, this movie is incredibly amazing and it's like a 90% Rotten Tomatoes right now or something like this. So it's like obviously great, but it's more about kind of like McCarthy and a little bit about the stuff about the movie. So funny enough, McCarthy was a working electrician in West Cork while making micro-budget shorts on the weekends.
Oh, yes, because he did have a number of short films. Yeah, for people who aren't familiar, Damien McCarthy is the writer-director of, in the past about 6 years or so, a few films that have done exceptionally well, Hokum being the latest. Prior to that, in 2024, he wrote and directed the film Oddity, which was a huge success. And in 2020, he wrote and directed the film Caveat, which I think is a quieter one.
It's a quieter one. Seriously, should be seen.
I think it was a bit more of a sleeper hit in the sense that it seemed to start to put him on the map, and then Oddity really launched him into the stratosphere. So,
Essentially. So the funny thing is that the whole name of the main character, which is Baumann, it's kind of like a inside joke into the whole electrician work because spelled O-H-M is a unit of electrical resistance.
Oh, is it?
Yes, exactly.
That's funny.
And also, I guess, you know, it also kind of represents the actors McCarthy's resistance to returning to that career that he had.
Oh, I see.
And the character's resistance to everything around him.
Yep.
Because that's kind of like what happens, right?
Yeah, we're not going to get into that until the spoilery bit. No. But yes, there's definitely a lot of that going on. That's
it. Not yet. Surprisingly enough, a bunch of the work that he tried to submit to festivals in the past got completely rejected early on.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did, he went to YouTube. And he uploaded a 4.5-minute black and white short of something that he did called He Dies at the End.
Oh,
and
it went
viral and basically launched his career.
Nice.
He also, as you mentioned, does the cats running.
Yeah. I think they're their own characters now. I feel like every single episode we mention the cats because they make noise at some point. So you'll have to forgive them. We have two. And every time we sit down to record, it's like, this is the time when they're
it's the best time.
I'm awake and I'm going to fucking run around and bother everyone. Time. Yep.
Right. So he edited Oddity himself, apparently, on the weekends over like 18 months. He had an early draft of Hokum sitting in the drawer while he was cutting Oddity.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had written that like a long time ago, essentially. Surprisingly enough about Adam Scott, who is the main character, here, he basically like cast himself into the movie.
Nice.
So he watched Oddity. Yeah.
And he loved it.
So he watched Oddity. He got completely obsessed with McCarthy's work. He called, emailed the director.
Okay.
Right. And he was like, okay, I mean, yes, you're a big name type of thing, but all right.
But he was like, this is weird.
Yeah. But then he saw him in Severance and he was like, yep, this guy needs to be in my movie.
I think that was the interesting thing about this, right, is that I think when the original announcement had happened and then when the first like teaser had dropped for it, a lot of people were like, oh, Adam Scott in a horror movie, that's a weird choice.
That's a choice, huh?
But I think that I never felt that way because the first season of Severance had already aired at that point. And so I came away from that being like, no, I think it'll
be works
good.
That's it.
I can see it
exactly.
But prior to that, he's mostly known for work in comedy, so I get it. Like, if all you've ever watched is like Parks and Rec, you're gonna be like, what's this? I don't know. So,
yeah, I agree. All right. So, what is this movie actually about without getting too much into this spoiler?
I love that you're
things.
Like, you explain it better. Take it away.
Yes.
So, yes.
I did my bit.
Yeah. So, as mentioned, the film centers around a character whose name is Om Bauman, who is traveling from the States to Ireland to visit a small inn that he knows that his parents visited a number of years prior. They honeymooned there, it turns out. He's traveling there to scatter their ashes after they've both passed away. And while he is there, he uncovers the fact through talking to people that apparently the inn is haunted allegedly by a witch of some sort.
Which is kind of like one of those, oh, please, what are you talking about?
Yes.
Just making this scary because the inn is like in the middle of nowhere in Ireland, you know, in like a forest, basically.
Basically, yes. It's pretty much in the woods.
So,
yeah, so it's almost like a witch's cottage in a way. It's really weird. So he obviously, and there are things that occur that I'm not going to get into right now. There are some things that occur at the beginning that are kind of like exposition to a degree that lead to him looking into what the actual mystery of this is and whether or not this witch actually exists.
But a lot more happens than this.
Yes. I'm giving, like I said, I feel like the problem is I'm going to have to wait until we get a little bit further
into
the spoilery parts, because honestly, anything else that I say really is going to give away really interesting stuff about the plot and the characters, so I don't really want to do that.
That's fair.
Yeah. So, as mentioned, the film stars, I mean, a number of different people, but that's it. Primarily, of course, Adam Scott plays the character of Om. He is our lead. We have David Wilmot, who plays the character of Jerry, who I was like, my eyes started twitching because I was like, I know this guy from something else.
Okay,
I know,
please tell me, because I didn't look into him, but he was for sure super familiar.
Yeah, so his name is David Wilmot. He is an Irish actor, and we would have seen him in the last couple of years in a TV series on Netflix called Bodkin about a podcaster, true crime podcaster, who visits rural Ireland to uncover a mystery.
Was he in that?
He was one of the locals who the lead, I believe, gets like super, super involved with in trying to figure out. And I believe he's one who's like accused of a murder, but he didn't actually do it.
Sure,
there's like a lot. There are a lot of layers to that. It was a fun series, honestly.
Yeah, seriously, it's very good. You should check it out if you
it.
Are into that.
Yeah, so that's David Wilmot, who plays Jerry. An actor named Michael Patrick plays the character of Fergal.
Yep.
We have Peter Coonan, who plays Mal, and Will O'Connell, who plays Albie, who's the bellhop, as well as Florence Ordish, who plays the character of Fiona. There are a couple of other people, too, in slightly smaller roles as well, but that's kind of like your main overarching cast. So,
cool.
First impressions.
Okay, seriously, this is by far one of the better movies I've seen this year. it's amazing. There is, like, it's scary the way that, you know, he does his movies being scary, because it's not anything too crazy that happens. It's very much kind of like normal locations with a supernatural surrounding around it.
Correct.
You know, he has very good jump scares. It's atmospheric. The sound design is great. You know, there is kind of like a story within a story in this movie, which I really liked, you know. It's not, it's very not straightforward. Not that it's convoluted and weird in a sense, but there's layers to what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, seriously, all in all, I think this movie is absolutely phenomenal. I'm not surprised that it did so well at South by Southwest. Yeah, seriously, like, for me, I might need to sleep on it, because sometimes we do.
No, we do. We overhype sometimes if we really just had a good time with something.
Yeah, but
we
have seriously, so far, I would say it's definitely like an 8.5.
Nice. Okay. Totally fair. I think that makes
out
sense.
Out of 10?
Yeah.
8.5 digs. That's my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
I think I'm inclined to agree, honestly. I feel like so far it's 3 for 3. McCarthy seems to kind of knock it out of the park. And it almost feels like you can kind of see, as his films progress, him sort of honing certain aspects of the way that he makes these films, which is so cool and so interesting to watch, because it's almost like you're watching the development as it's happening, which is cool. This film does a lot of, particularly what Oddity does, Caveat does this as well, but I would say what Oddity largely does too is that it is a study of people and the darkness within people specifically, that is wrapped in kind of a supernatural package to a degree, and utilizes to an extent some of those supernatural aspects to, I guess, kind of turn up, like, you know, the kind of human side of things, and like it adds to like the scares and stuff like that and the sense of dread and unease. But these, both of the movies, I especially feel like Oddity and Caveat as well do this, but like particularly Oddity and this, Hokum, really play up the fact that, like, really the true actual horror is really the people who are involved. It's not as much the actual supernatural beings, honestly.
I like how deep you went with this.
Sorry.
Anyway. But in a sense that, like, I totally agree with you now that I kind of think about it a little bit, but I was so absorbed into the movie that I didn't even think about that. You know what I mean? It's just now kind of like talking about it that I'm like, oh yeah, okay, of this makes a lot of sense.
When we get into the spoilery bits, I'll kind of touch on some aspects of that too, but I will just say that perhaps if you are listening to this and you are somebody who is a woman or identifies as female, you will maybe kind of agree with me with regards to certain characters and certain treatment of characters that way, which maybe just automatically makes you feel some sort of way about what the actual story of this film is.
All right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I, based on all of that, and that's it, to your point, the atmosphere, the film style, the build of the scares in the movie, of which there are numerous ones, all of that stuff, the performances of the characters, the development that you get, surprisingly, in a film that's under 2 hours long, all of that stuff, I think that's it for the time being. I think I'm hovering around like an 8 out of 10. This was thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable, and it's so fascinating to see Damien McCarthy's films just kind of like, not that I'm saying like, oh, they're improving because the last one wasn't as good. It's not that, but almost to see that there are certain things that are being added and certain aspects that are almost being polished as he has
new ideas and things being polished. Yeah, and he's doing it in, you know, very kind of like specific ways of his style.
Yep.
That is just getting better and better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so with all of that said,
seriously, fucking go watch it.
I mean, yeah, okay, so if you're here and you haven't seen it, that's sad. You should go watch the movie.
Okay, it just dropped. Chill.
No, I know, but I'm saying.
Oh, you mean like in general?
Exactly. Yes, like, sure. Pause and go watch it.
Don't pause.
And then come back.
Keep listening.
You better come back. but other than that, we think we can get into some of the more detailed aspects of the plot.
Yeah, it's a little bit more detailed. It's not going to reveal too much because that would be a shame.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a little bit more detailed stuff about what's going on. So we can touch on a couple of other points.
Exactly. That's it. Particularly all of our favorite things about it. So let's do it.
That's it. Do it. Gary, get over here.
Woo. You've been warned. Spoilers ahead.
That was a Mortal Kombat reference.
Is anybody else looking forward to that?
I'm kind of excited for it. Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah.
It, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm there for the fun for it. Anyways, I think we're talking about Hokum.
We are.
By the way, just in case you came back and you're like, what the fuck? Why are you talking about Mortal Kombat?
So they even, I mean, like what I kind of love is things like the title of this film. So the title of the film, the word Hokum itself.
Yeah.
Is like a reference basically to something that's like nonsensical, basically. Like exactly, that's just Hokum, it's silly, it's meaningless, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it's essentially nonsense or not to be believed or whatever.
Which is how the character of Om and a couple of others initially treat the idea of there being a witch on this property.
Yes.
At this inn called the Bilberry Woods Hotel, which they, you know, of course people treat as though this is actual fact, but his character is quite the skeptic and does not believe that that's true.
Yes, because he's like taking, so from what I understand, the moment we get into it, he's very much kind of like a pragmatic writer, essentially, who's very much straight to the point. He's also very much of an asshole.
Oh, gosh.
He's so rude.
So the thing with Om's character is that he is quite multi-layered.
Yes.
And you do only get bits and pieces that are revealed steadily throughout the course of the film. Now, they don't excuse his behavior. Mm-mm. They do explain it, obviously, without, I would say, that's it, excusing the behavior. Because, yes, in the early parts of the film, he is... like, he is off-putting to a degree that I'm like, he can't be like this for the whole movie, or I'm actually not going to have a great time.
I know, right?
It. Like, there would have been nothing to sympathize with had I not been given the additional context that I needed for this. And I will say, that's a very kind of big turn for someone like Adam Scott, who, regardless of the stuff that he's in, usually plays a slightly more likable character. Yes. But in the first about 20 minutes of this movie, you're like, oh my God, what a piece of shit.
Yo, so like, I was watching that and I'm like, he better die in a gruesome death as a character, because if not, there's no way.
You have that knee-jerk reaction where you're like, what a dickbag, my God. Anyway, he's clearly somebody who's struggling. He's obviously like a pretty popular author.
Yes.
And he's in the middle of trying to finish... the epilogue basically to the end of a trilogy that he's been writing, something to do with a conquistador who's like exploring and trying to find some sort of, I guess, treasure or something to that degree. Whatever. Anyway, he's working on finishing the book, and it seems like it's going to be ending on a pretty bleak note, because obviously he is somebody who's struggling pretty heavily with like depression.
Yes.
And is feeling quite bleak, I think, and pretty nihilistic in his own world. And so I think that's transferring over into his work, of course, which it would. You write what you know. And so unfortunately, that is sort of the case.
I mean, literally some of the opening scenes is just him writing in what looks like a very nice house.
Yeah.
But it's just all dark. There's like one light. Oh my God, it stressed me out so much.
I'm like, dude, put a fucking light on. Like,
there's
turn on
one
a light.
Light, and it's on his little computer table, and he's writing, and it's just nighttime, and it's by himself, and it's darkness, and that kind of almost, like, you know, that's basically the opening sequence in a sense, and that kind of represents the whole character, really.
Definitely. You know what I mean? It's where he's at that point in his life.
Yeah.
So he travels to Ireland. He travels to the hotel because he wants to revisit.
Also, he drinks a lot of scotch, and I never got to see what goddamn scotch does he have.
It's the kind that turns you into an alcoholic, I guess.
Wow.
He's pretty intense about it.
That's not right. You can't say that. Scotch is nice.
Anyway, he's looking through memorabilia from his parents and remembers them speaking about honeymooning at the Bilberry Woods Hotel, and decides to travel to Ireland in order to scatter their ashes, because it is the only time in his life, mostly, that he can remember them talking in a way that they seemed happy.
Yeah, that they were happy.
Essentially. Exactly. And we get a little more context about that later. So he travels there. He meets, the cast of characters of folks most of whom are employed at the hotel, essentially. Mal is the person who, like, runs the front desk. You have the character of, who am I thinking of right now? The owner.
Yeah, the owner, sure.
The owner, Mr. Cobb, who we don't see very frequently, but he's, like, a bit of a weird character, also kind of an asshole. There you go.
Grumpy old man, whatever.
Yes. Fergal, who is the groundskeeper of the hotel. They've got that funny thing with the goats, which made me chuckle. Fiona, who is a bartender, essentially.
Yeah.
And Albie, who is the bellboy, bellhop, I should say. Bellboy sounds weird for somebody who's clearly like in their 40s or something. It's really bizarre. Anyway, yes. Who's the bellhop? Om treats this entire experience as something that I think in the back of his mind he thought would make him maybe feel some type of way and maybe help with something. But I think he realizes basically immediately upon arrival, this will not fix any of the feelings that he's really having and any of the struggles that he's experiencing. And so unfortunately, in feeling that way, he takes out any of the negativity or negative feelings that he's experiencing himself on pretty much everyone around him. Mm-hmm. He is like atrociously rude to people and cruel to them on purpose, particularly to Albie, but also is very confrontational, very almost aggressive in a way in his just manner of interacting with everybody around him.
Yeah, and a cool thing is that throughout the different movies that McCarthy has directed and done, there's objects that appear from other movies.
Yes.
So like in Oddity, there was that creepy ass bunny from Caveat.
Yes.
And then in Oddity, there was the bell.
In Hokum, if you haven't seen it, yeah.
In Hokum, there's that bell, mm-hmm, that is kind of like an Oddity,
which, like,
at the end.
Which is so interesting because at the end of Oddity, we have spoilers. I know we already gave a spoiler warning, but spoilers for Oddity. If you haven't seen it, so just skip ahead like 20 seconds. At the end of Oddity, we have the scene in which one of the characters rings that bell, and there's a bellhop,
yeah, I know,
that shows up. And yeah, I'm like, is this supposed to be some sort of weird universe where, like, Albie is the bellhop that shows up that's haunting him at the end? I don't know.
It's very possible.
Is his spirit stuck in the bell? That would be crazy. Anyway, I have no idea. But yeah, it would be cool if it literally came, if this was a secret prequel to Oddity and it came from that hotel and there was like a...
I mean, I don't know how that's going to work.
Me neither. But nobody in this movie ever has a cell phone that I can see.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
So I wonder.
But then he has a laptop.
Oh, you're right, he does.
You know, so it's like it's not like a giant ass laptop that you have to carry with two hands.
MacBook,
no, it's
not
like a normal laptop.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know. Anyway, whatever. It's one of those ambiguous things. Anyway, so... Unfortunately, I'll give it unfortunately, I'm hoping you've watched it if you're here and you're hearing all the spoilers, but also
don't go too much into that because those are
trigger warning
parts
for, you know, self-harm and everything and attempted suicide. So the character obviously is struggling greatly with his own mental health. And so after unfortunately attempting to end his life, he's found by Fiona, the bartender, who had a very bad feeling, very good intuition, and a very bad feeling that something was going on with him. Once he is released from hospital, after he recovers, he comes back to the inn and is informed by Mal, the guy who runs the front desk and who is the son-in-law, it turns out, of Mr. Cobb, who owns the inn. He's informed that Fiona is missing and has been for a number of weeks, because it's been weeks since this has happened. So he becomes quite upset by this because he, obviously, this woman saved his life. And he, you know, wanted to speak to her, to apologize and to thank her, and is now kind of feeling like a writer does. They're almost like journalists in a way, right? You become sort of ensconced in a mystery of some sort and you want to kind of understand what's going on. And so through his own curiosity about wanting to help her if he can, and speaking to a couple of other people, the, you know, general people kind of not really wanting to speak about it. Fergal is like very standoffish. He's definitely a character that you like suspect of something at some point. He also interacts with the character of Jerry, who's like the weird guy who kind of lives in a van in the woods.
He's so nice.
I love
Jerry's such a nice guy.
Jerry's a treasure. I love him.
Yo, seriously.
And the two of them together, because Jerry is convinced that Fiona is somewhere still in the hotel, they are convinced that they need to go back into it. So there's an entire sequence of events that follows with a break-in and everything, and then getting stuck at the hotel. Owen winds up being locked into the honeymoon suite, which is where
the haunted room
allegedly haunts.
Yes.
And goes through the process of finding Fiona, finding out that holy fucking shit, there actually is a witch here, and trying to find a way to save himself, of course, within this. But also get justice to a degree for the person who it turns out is responsible for the majority of all the garbage that's happened here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because it's not just kind of like a witch thing. Yes, a witch plays a factor in this movie, whatever it is, but there's other events that happen that, you know, are about the disappearance.
Well, I mean, this is exactly what I was mentioning before we got into the spoilery bit of things, which is what my point was about the people being
right,
the villain,
yes, exactly,
the real villains.
Yes.
Like, yeah, there's a witch in the fucking sub-basement who likes to kidnap people, and she's part of like a folklore tale that we hear a little bit about at the beginning of the movie and everything. But she's not the real
villain. Kind of like the folklore tale is all the whole thing is that there's this witch or entity, whatever it is, and it kind of chains you and takes you into the underworld.
Hell,
where,
basically, yeah.
Yeah. It gives you a tour of hell, and then you basically get parts of your body ripped off by demons that are in hell.
Exactly. Mr. Cobb is very casually telling this story to children.
Yeah, that's it. In that the first great. Scene,
those poor kids are standing there traumatized. I'm like, oh boy, okay, don't let this man near kids.
Yeah.
So yeah, so this, but this is something, this whole story, like really,
it's the more, way that everything it's more works like out, an envelope. This whole witch thing is an envelope for the main story.
Yes, which is that it's the people that are awful. It's not the it's not the witch. Yeah, there is a witch there, but there are some people that are a lot worse than her. She's definitely not the main villain of the film.
Exactly. Story. So all of that. So like there's all those things happen. I don't think we should say much more than this because this is a very interesting part. Fuck, I don't like, I guess, what was your first thing that you liked the most about this?
I think to kick things off, I'd say my first sort of favorite was the setting itself. Damien McCarthy has this tendency. Everything that he does is set in a home to some degree. Caveat That's was set true. In a house. Oddity was set in a house. I know
also
a hotel
very remote
is
homes.
Very much, yes.
Like Caveat was literally on a fucking island. You had to row for 30
so
minutes to get in.
I was
I
like,
know.
There's no fucking way you could pay me to do that. Anyway, and Oddity as well. The house is quite a ways out.
Yeah, super
you know,
far
it's away
out.
From town and everything. And the hotel, as we mentioned earlier, is in the middle of the fucking woods. It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
It is stunning. And thank goodness you, I don't think you would be too fussed about staying there, like as a person, because there are enough people working there that I wouldn't be uncomfortable. You know, it's not like there's one person who does everything and then you're stuck there with some creepy guy. It's not Norman Bates. You know what I mean? Like there are multiple people running it. It is a nice, well-kept property as well. So you wouldn't be too uncomfortable, but the setting is stunning. It is so interesting. Damien McCarthy winds up creating these senses of isolation in places that, you know, do have some people in them and everything, but he's just got a way of doing that, but in like these really beautiful, really interesting settings. There's always something interesting about the property. There's like a hole in the wall, or there's like a weird door. In this case, there's a dumbwaiter that goes down into that fucking basement in this one. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's there's something really
crazy.
Interesting about the property itself that he selects.
Yeah. I think it's probably a device, you know, to get the whole thing
for
of
sure.
isolation.
Yeah.
I don't know, cell phones don't work or something like that or whatever it is, but whatever, fuck, I don't care, man. It works so well that, yeah.
I agree.
I understand and I agree. I want to say, maybe that's not one of my first favorite things right now, but I did like the whole, you know, writer aspect of the movie, but also the setting of where it is, kind of like a haunted hotel room type of thing.
Oh, definitely.
It really, I was watching this and I was like, this reminds me so much of Stephen King's 1408.
Yeah.
And it did, like, the comparisons are.
It had almost like a 1408 / Secret Window kind of mashup.
Yeah, okay.
In a way.
With a bit of sprinkle of The Shining because of the whole hotel and everything.
Hotel,
you know what I mean?
And stuff. Again, like, isolated hotel setting. That kind of thing, but it doesn't really, but also I'm not saying that in a way where like it copies them. It doesn't at all. It really
does its
own thing.
It does its own thing, and it's more one of those things that is, you know, it's, I guess, inspirational, and just because you put kind of like a grumpy character who likes to drink and put a haunted hotel together in a specific room, that is kind of like your 1408 is just a combination of those things, essentially. For me, seriously, the number one thing, my God, there's so many. It's kind of hard to choose for.
I would almost need to rewatch it, and I'd probably find other things.
Yes,
as well.
That's it. Exactly. You know what? I want to say that, maybe as weird as it sounds, after you get to like the character a little bit, because at the beginning he fucking sucks.
Oh gosh.
I liked that he is smart.
Yes.
A lot.
He's resourceful.
Very resourceful. Yes. The things that are said to him, like, you know, the bartend, Fiona, she kind of mentions to him, because the whole folklore thing, to be like, hey, well, you know, if you ever see a witch, draw a circle with chalk
with
around
chalk.
You, you know?
Yep.
And he kind of makes a joke out of it to be like, yeah, I'm sure I was going to be carrying chalk and whatever it
and
is.
And as if I'm going to run into a fucking witch.
That's
you know?
It. And also that, and it's kind of like, you know, I guess anyone would just kind of write it off and completely forget about it. But he remembers that, and then he uses that in the movie.
True.
You know, there is also another device that he kind of creates in the movie. He tries to escape by, you know, trying to create kind of like a screwdriver, whatever it is. So he's like, he's smart, resourceful. And that builds more into the character.
Oh, definitely. Because you're not just like, oh my God, just figure it out, you fucking idiot. Like, no, yeah. He's really doing something.
Or he just doesn't do anything, right? And he's like, oh no, this room is locked and I can't get out. Well, I just guess I'm going to sleep until I die.
No, no. You know what I mean? Like, not at all.
And I think it's normal. Like, I think everyone would try to do something to get out of the situation. Yeah. But, like, he actually tries hard enough. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's something that I kind of liked about the character, because there's a whole 180 degree from the beginning to where he is kind of like towards the end in the middle. But then also at the end, he still has that little asshole behavior in a little bit. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. He's like still a bit of a dick and stuff. So and you're kind of like,
okay. That's it. So the character doesn't fully change. Cause no. I was almost like, we're getting towards the end and I was watching this. I was like, oh no, what is it going to be? A nice guy now, which is not going to make any sense at all. And you're like, no, okay. It makes sense.
Yes. You know? No, I agree. So, he kept enough of the shades of the character, like the man himself, that you weren't like, okay, well, you're acting like a completely different person now, which is weird. Like, it's weird. Don't get me wrong. You would be massively changed. I can only imagine.
For sure.
After even just, you know, what he attempts to do at the beginning of the film, I'm sure that would make that would have a massive impact, of course, in, you know, your behavior and everything that you're dealing with. I can only imagine. But with that in mind, you still wouldn't fundamentally change. Like, not every single thing about your personality would switch, No, it wouldn't make any sense. So that fair enough. Yeah.
All right. What is the second thing that you like the most?
So second favorite, I think I lean towards, and it's funny because I made that comment at the beginning of the episode, but second favorite, I think what I lean towards is the use of light. In the film, honestly, you know, I joked because it was just something that came to mind as we were watching the movie, but genuinely the use of light and what it hides and what it reveals, I thought was really clever and very well done. It's obviously lends itself very well to the atmosphere of the film.
Yes, of course, because you know, again, it's in the middle of nowhere and it's a, by the looks of it, a very old hotel. It's not like they're going to have LED spotlights everywhere.
No, that's
you
it.
Know and what
it,
I mean?
I mean, it lends itself very well to the overall theme, right? This leans very folk horror.
Yes.
It is like a large part, I would say, of what the subgenre of the movie is, right? And with keeping that in mind, there are just no times in like a folk horror sort of story where you're expecting it to be a lot of artificial lights around. And so they use natural lighting, obviously. But apart from that, what you're getting are like lamps and things with like really heavy shades on them. And everything is very kind of dark and almost oppressive in a way. But it's very just atmospheric. And I really liked the way that it steadily sort of maintained itself throughout the course of the film.
You know? It's super well done. And it also puts you in the situation with the character.
Yes, true.
You know what I mean? Because, like, he carries... So, first of all, like, obviously this happens, like, kind of overnight, in a sense, or into the evenings and stuff. And he does carry a very old lantern, essentially. So, it doesn't create a lot of light in the first place, you know?
No.
But when he is there and it's dark and a bunch of shit is happening and all he has, that little source of light, it really puts you there with the character. Because, you can't see anything else. It's not like you said, there's a lot of light or something that you can see what's happening in the background or whatever it is. No, you're there with him and you're basically experiencing it as much as he does.
Yes, exactly. So, you're really put into his shoes. I wonder if the lighting is like Damien McCarthy's thing, because he used to be an electrician, exactly what you're talking about before. I wonder if he's just fucking good at lighting a scene.
You know? It's very possible. I mean, also apparently, at least from what I'm finding here, God, who knows? Apparently McCarthy is or was a big gamer.
Oh, okay.
You know, so he did probably play a couple of games like, you know, Amnesia, Dark Descent.
Oh, sure.
Oh, actually, no. Apparently, he's never played it. Okay, well, haha. But anyways, it reminded me of that game. You know what I mean? Because there, you're basically walking in kind of like weird places, and all you have is a little lantern. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a pretty fucking scary game. It's considered one of the scariest ones kind of also an indie game. But yeah, all you have there is like kind of like a, you know, a little bit of a lighting and stuff. So maybe it's inspired by that. I mean, I feel like everyone knows this game. You don't have to play it, you know what I mean, to do that. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. It's entirely possible.
It's very possible.
Yeah.
But then again, it also makes sense with the genre, right? I'm pretty sure. You know what? We should ask that someone next time we have a director on the podcast to be like, what are the rules of the different genres that exist? You know, if it's folk horror, are you supposed to not use a lot of lighting type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, into like natural lighting or like,
yeah,
like,
for sure. There's
that's it. Keep things
stylistic
like,
styles yeah. or rules, I guess, whatever you want to call it. That
I mean, I wouldn't be too surprised.
Yeah,
honestly,
100%. So for me, number two
or number three? Where are we at right now?
Me, it's number two.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I mean the other one I was just talking about.
Okay, fine.
It's a bonus, whatever. For me, number two is, I want to say like the flow in the story itself.
Okay.
I really liked the way that things are done in the story, the way that it's written, the way that everything kind of flows throughout the story because nothing feels forced.
No,
you know what I mean?
True.
Everything makes a lot of sense, and all the things that happen and like the reason why he comes back to the hotel and kind of like how that happened in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, and then the whole subplot, or maybe it is the main plot. Like I said, the main part, the letter inside the envelope that I said is the whole envelope being the witch story
the witch.
And the main part inside the letter. You know what I mean? Like all that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And the way that things happen in the whole movie in general, it all doesn't feel forced at all, and it all kind of makes sense together. You know what I mean?
I get that.
The whole the witch part, and then the whole kind of like murder and the mystery behind it, and the resolution and what happens, etc. I thought it was just really great. Like I was not taking out of the movie at all during the whole hour and what is it, 40 minutes or
roughly,
something like that. Yeah, there's some movies that you're kind of watching and you're like, oh, what the fuck is going on? And then you're just kind of taken out, and it takes you 15 minutes to get back in. Mm-hmm. No. In this one, nothing.
No.
The only time I was taken out is when we, I think, heard a mouse
in the movie theater. Okay. Like, yeah, right towards the end, we were suddenly hear like a little squeak, and it was not in the movie.
No, it was not in
the
movie.
Scene.
Yeah, yeah.
It would not have called
it would have
for
not
it at
made
all.
Sense.
No. And we were like, is there a rat in this movie theater?
It's not a rat. It's probably a little nice mouse that likes to eat popcorn.
We were downtown. It could have been a rat.
Whatever. That's the only thing that took me out of the movie.
Yeah, that's fair. I literally lifted my feet off the floor because I put them on the back of the chair in front of me. There was no one in it. Don't panic, everyone. Because I was like, maybe I'm just going to not find something nibbling on my laces. Yep, cool. There was like 5 minutes left in the movie. I was like, well, we're almost done.
That poor little mouse that just wanted some popcorn was
poor
the only
baby.
Thing that took me out.
I know. It was probably like, oh, fuck me. There's a lot of people in here. That's stressful.
Oh, guys, I'm sorry. Are you not done with the movie yet? Okay, I'm not going to spoil it to you.
I'll
be back.
I've seen it. I think my third, maybe this is kind of similar to what you were just talking about, but I think my third favorite was largely the fact that the writing is so clever because it gives you... You know, you're presented with a story and you think you know who this character is and what the problem is. And then you learn little bits of his backstory and you're like, oh, God, okay, that's why he's dealing with everything that he's dealing with.
Makes more sense.
This is why he's struggling so much because of his childhood and what's occurred. And then within the mystery of trying to figure out what's happened to Fiona when he does get further into that and finds her and gets more context about why did this happen to her
in the first place?
Yes. Why did this happen to her? Because yes, spoiler, Fiona's dead, obviously, but what, like, you know, this poor woman has happened to her and she's quite a pleasant character. Like I liked her a lot. And again, that's it. This is a woman with obviously very good intuition because she just has this weird feeling that there's something wrong with this man who she's had one conversation with.
Yeah, seriously.
And takes the initiative to force Albie to like go into his room at the hotel and saves his life. You know, she's obviously not a fucking idiot. And so, you know, finding out the story of what happened to her and why she even wound up in the situation in the first place was something that was interesting to get into as well. But again, you know, you don't know. And then you find out, you're like, okay, she's probably dead. Okay, yes, she is dead. But why? And then you get the why and you're like, oh, fuck. Okay, there's like a lot more to this than I would have expected. And then you get little bits and bobs more from different characters about how we got here and why these things have occurred. And I loved all the little bits that you got that were not all done one big dump of information.
Yeah, I agree.
You got them really sporadically throughout the course of the story.
It's true. That's kind of like the whole flow of it, right? Is that there's no huge exposition dump or someone just explains the whole thing that happened, whatever it is. You get bits and pieces of it. But also the good thing about that is that it's not told. It's shown.
Yes, definitely.
Right? Yes. Kind of like what they always say, you know, when you're writing, in school or whatever it is, they're like, don't say show.
Don't, show me. Don't tell That's me it. Exactly
it's what's literally what happens in this movie, because the moment you get into the little thing of like, okay, well, what actually happened to her or him or whatever it is, it cuts to a scene of what actually happened at that time, whether it is a little bit in the past or much further in the past or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously, that it's a smart way of movie telling, movie making, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, like a very smart like filmmaking sort of.
Yeah, that's it. And then you come back to it and then you get further into the story. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, seriously, it's really well done.
Yeah, and I think just as the last thing, this is just like a little bonus. I just want to, because we've not really spoken about it too much in detail, I should just shout out like the entire cast of the film, really. The performances in this are really excellent. Like Adam Scott is fantastic.
Seriously, yeah.
So incredible. Good. He's so incredible. But, you know, he's not the only member of the cast that I thought was really great. Like, obviously, the character of Jerry is so sweet and lovely, and I loved him so much. But even the other characters, whether you like them or you hate them, you know, the man who plays Fergal, Michael Patrick, I think did a really great job, because you're just kind of like, what a fucking douchebag. And then you don't know if there's more to that or not, and you got to kind of wait to find out. The character of Mal, I thought was a good little flip it on its head type of vibe from like that, ah, gosh, shucksy doodles, I'm just the nice guy who runs the inn. To something else. And that, I feel like I can kind of give that away, because this seems to be something that Damien McCarthy sort of does. He did it in Oddity as well, with the husband just being like, oh, I loved my wife and I'm sad she's dead.
And then you get
little bits where it's like, oh, but it's been less than a year and I'm dating this woman and we're living together. And like just little things that you're kind of like, okay, so you suck a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit, a lot.
And this is like a similar kind of vibe
right, as well.
Right. He does like to point out that men are terrible a lot, which, you know, I can appreciate.
Wow. Okay. I'm just going to go fuck myself, I guess. Bye.
You know, you're always the exception to this for me, right?
I'm just saying, there's other people who are nice in general.
Yeah, of course. Always. I'm generalizing, but in, you know.
But also not generalizing.
But also kind of, you know.
Oh my God.
Anyway, so yes. So I find he has a tendency to do that a little bit. So that's something that you see as a bit of a recurring thing in this too. Like all of the characters, Albie also, I really liked the character.
Yeah, he was so innocent and nice.
Yeah, that's it. He's got like a naivete that really like works incredibly well for it. And that's it. I just kept looking at him in the bellhop uniform and I was like, oh my God, is he the fucking ghost bellhop at the end of Oddity?
I even checked to see if it's maybe the same actor, because the end of Oddity, he was just kind of like all makeup ridden and whatever it is. We don't know. It's not.
Damn it.
I know.
Oh, well, it's okay. It doesn't matter. It's probably not the case, but it just occurred to me when I realized what was going on. We saw the bell. I was like,
it could be, man. I mean, to be fair, like he likes to reference his objects in the other movies. So it could absolutely mean nothing, but also it could mean, it could be.
That's it. It could just be him creating his own little cinematic universe where there are like little callbacks to things. Who knows? Anyway, overall, that's it. I think we've gushed enough about it, but we both obviously really enjoyed the film.
Yes.
It was excellently made. This is such a great kickoff to the month of May. We are getting so many good looking new releases this month, between all of them. I'm going to try to name things off the top of my head, but like Obsession, Saccharin comes out this month, Corporate Retreat, Passenger, and Backrooms. These are all movies that I can think of that we are getting.
Pitfall.
In
the US for now, as far as we know, but still.
Get it over here, guys. Come on, you can do it. That we're all getting before the end of the month of May. This is a huge month for the genre. It's
incredible.
And this was such a good way to kick it off. Also, there's something about, we're hitting May. We're mostly in a spring kind of season at this point. It's a little bit hard to tell over here, but we mostly are in a spring season over here too. And there's something about folk horror at this time of year that I think a lot of people will agree.
Oh, like a spring thing? Okay,
it hits
very specifically. Yeah,
I really appreciate that. So, very happy about that too. But yeah, there's a lot of good to say about this, but genuinely watch it and decide for yourself, but see it. Don't skip this.
Yeah, seriously, you have to see it. The only thing that I could say about this movie that didn't make sense to me and that really annoyed me is the fucking dumb waiter. How does it go up and down?
With the button.
Yeah, but the mechanics behind it, where it...
Oh, dude, I have no idea.
No, but because usually, like especially in the old places, dumb waiter, it has a rope.
Yes.
At the top of it, right? So then you pull it and it's a pulley system and whatever it is. There was no rope at the top. We saw the thing when he looks up,
oh, no, but there's no rope. It was on like a track or something. I think I don't know what it was supposed to be. Maybe, or maybe it was supposed to be supernatural. I have no idea.
Maybe it was a track. The only thing I can think of is it's like a piston that pushes it up.
Oh, that's possible.
You know what I mean? But that's such a complicated system. It like, is. What?
I don't know.
You would have to dig the whole length of the shaft under the basement foundation to, and then have a mechanism there that push. That makes no sense.
You've given this a lot of thought. I don't know. Okay, I don't have an answer.
That's the thing. I mean, look, it didn't take me out of the movie, but I was thinking about it. I was like, how does this work?
But you noticed it and you were like, where the fuck is the fucking rope? What's going on? Where's the cable? Maybe there was a cable and they just didn't film it because they didn't want it to break a shot or something. Fuck, I have no idea. Listen.
Anyways, things I think
anything
about.
Anything is possible. Anyway, this was very cool. Like I said, great way to kick off the month. And I think with all of this in mind, I'm just looking forward to everything else that we'll have going on for the rest of the month too.
Oh, yeah.
We also are going to have in the next few weeks, not one, but two interviews.
Mm-hmm.
One with a horror author named Annie Neugebauer, who was kind enough to sit down with us and chat with us about different aspects of horror and all of the sort of upcoming projects and things that she's working on. She's got some really creepy stuff, so it's really cool. And you guys should check that out. And then probably later on this month, we will have an interview coming out as well with Rye Barrett, who is a Canadian actor who most recently and most famously played Johnny in In a Violent Nature and will be reprising that role in the second film when it comes out later on this year, which we have seen is on its way.
And we're talking to him about, you know, horror movies, a little bit about In a Violent Nature 2. Mm-hmm. If you want to get, I guess, more in depth about In a Violent Nature 2, go check out Horror Roulette's podcast. They also spoke to him.
Oh, they've spoken
and
to him as well.
And they went and also, deep into the questions
and
there.
And also, please check out our collab episode with them where we spoke about the movie in the first place. That's how all of this came to fruition. And just ignore all of the weird jokes about trees and sex stuff. Because it was a fun conversation.
It was so funny. But yeah, so, you know, we spoke to him a bit, a little bit about the movie, but also a little bit about the whole Canadian horror scene that he's really big in and kind of like what's happening and what he's working on and how it is to, you know, make horror movies.
Yeah.
It's just so much hard, man. There's so much to it. So
there's
anyways,
a lot to it,
it's really fun. Very, like, you should be looking forward to it.
Exactly. So look forward to all of that. Obviously check out, we will be dropping all of that information and everything available through all of our socials. We're at Gravetone Pod everywhere. And definitely feel free to rate and review as mentioned earlier in the episode. It really helps us out. So that's great.
Yeah. Thank you so much in advance.
Yeah. And in the meantime, guys, stay scared and stay tuned.
Ciao, guys.